In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at Maximus.com/federal.
Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
With such a large and varied mission, you might say the Veterans Affairs Department has limitless opportunities to apply artificial intelligence. For what its plans actually are, I spoke to the VA's Deputy Chief Technology Officer for AI, Dr. Kimberly McManus. Well, let's start with the possible use cases for artificial intelligence at VA. I can think of about 10,000, but you probably have even more, but you can't do them all.
Yeah, so VA has AI in production today with a few dozen use cases listed as in operations in our inventory. There's kind of two main areas I'll call out to start with. One is in the risk prediction and preventative health space. So this is around how can we proactively identify veterans that might be benefiting from a specific intervention. So there we would use predictive modeling to identify veterans at elevated risk for adverse events. So specifically drug overdose and suicide are two that we have in operations today. These programs are called STORM and ReachVet. And so this output is then reviewed along with other information by healthcare providers to make care decisions. Another main area that AI is in use today is in the radiology space. In healthcare in general, radiology has been leading the way with over 75% of FDA-approved AI devices being from radiology. But in general, we see the potential for AI to contribute in the near term across really a wide range of areas at VA. And I think I see that in kind of three main categories. So one category is in reducing healthcare provider burnout. And in that vein, we have actively these AI tech sprints, which are part of the AI executive order. We're running two of them right now. One is around assisting with documenting clinical encounters, and the other is extracting information from paper medical records. And so both of these assist with these kind of long, tedious tasks that our healthcare providers often have to do. Another area then kind of similar to that is broadly improving veteran and staff experience. So this is around how can we kind of augment our current staff by helping with those tedious tasks and reducing administrative burden. And we see a lot of opportunity for that around really a wide range of areas, benefits to HR, to IT, et cetera. And then kind of the third area is better care for patients. And so that's where I see a lot of these FDA-approved medical devices, such as the ones in radiology, but there's new ones also in pathology and dermatology, et cetera. One thing I do want to call out is that we are taking trustworthy AI very seriously. So I think in June of 2023, we released our trustworthy AI framework, which outlines these six principles for how we consider any AI that comes in.
And we'll get into those six principles in a moment, but I wanted to just touch on a couple of the areas. In improving and doing all of this effort to improve the staff experience, then I guess by extension or indirectly, that would improve the service they give to patients because they'll be less harried and maybe have more time for patients if they're not trying to get stuff out of paper records that might be hard to locate. Or let's face it, a lot of computer systems, it's also hard to locate stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's an area that particularly these new generative technologies can help with as well. I think in the benefit space, for example, we also have a bunch of free text and paper records, et cetera, that we can use AI to start, one, using optical character recognition to be able to extract handwritten notes, to bring them into computer written notes. Once we have those, we can use AI to better extract the specific information within that, that a caseworker might be looking for. And then we can also potentially use generative technology to better summarize and identify information that's of interest. And that type of kind of search and summarization, I think, is really applicable across the VA enterprise, as well as across many other companies, whether it's our healthcare providers trying to find information in their electronic healthcare records, or whether it's our benefits adjudicators trying to identify information within when they're processing claims.
And when you have a type of bot, let's say, just for lack of a better word, that is looking through electronic health records pertinent to a particular case or a set of cases, and also reading handwritten notes or going to the whatever the source is, and then feeding that data to a generative program, that's a whole different ball of wax than the generative programs that have been trained with the world's entire 10 times the encyclopedia. That is to say, it's a very narrow set of data that you're training that generative for a particular case. That sounds like a lot more trustworthy than you usually see with generative. Am I getting it right?
Yeah. So I think anything that we do in the generative or the non-generative AI space, we're really focusing on ensuring that there is no misinformation, that we're not introducing bias, et cetera. So the tasks we're focusing specifically on tend to be internal because we find that as much lower risk because we can allow that human in the loop. So with those AI tech sprints, for example, if we're extracting information from paper records or documenting clinical encounters, we can have someone review that and identify whether there's any challenges there. But yes, then furthermore, the specific goal of each of those is particularly narrow to that use case as opposed to kind of broad opening.
I want to poke at that a little bit more. So there's two phases to it. One is gathering the relevant data in the first place. Again, the handwritten notes, if that's the case, or the electronic record related to a given case. At that point, do you do a test and see what the generative program produces and maybe give the same notes and electronic records about that case to an actual practitioner, see what kinds of conclusions that practitioner would draw, and compare the two to see if the generative is acting like the doc?
Yes, exactly. So in the AI tech sprints, one of the tracks is around assisting with documenting clinical encounters. And so this is taking doctor-patient conversations and extracting information and summarizing that as part of the tech sprints that are ongoing now is comparing a wide range of vendors who are participating in that competition and looking at the output that they're creating with synthetic data that we're using, and then comparing that to what a real practitioner would see as well to really understand what is the accuracy and what are the potential challenges that we're seeing in these, and are they higher quality enough for us to start introducing with real data into our systems. And so that is the kind of ongoing process we're doing right now.
I guess it's fair to say that it could help the practitioner. Maybe the generative could come up with ideas the practitioner, the human one, did not, and maybe those would be the preferable ones. The human could say, you know what, that generative program actually caught something I didn't.
Yeah, that's possible. I think that comes down to what it means to be accurate. But we're looking at each of them kind of really holistically, as well as having practitioners say, does this make sense? But yes.
Right. So the implication is that it can't be just the data scientist, which you are, I believe, a data scientist, has to be part of the team creating this. But you really need the users, I don't know, maybe even the patients in some cases.
Yeah, and I think I've been building ML models for over a decade, and that's the number one key to any success of a machine learning or an AI algorithm is that starting from the beginning, really having those end users, those healthcare clinical experts, the workflow experts, all really at the table, because as data scientists, we understand the math and the computers, but how an algorithm will actually fit in to a workflow, actually impact end users, is it usable, is it helpful, is it improving anything, really requires everyone to be at the table from the very beginning. So that's the approach that we take.
Sounds like you were ahead of your time here, having done this 10 years ago.
Yeah, it wasn't as popular back then. I'm very excited it's so popular now.
And I wanted to ask you about the suicide prevention effort, because I know the Veterans Affairs Department has literally tried everything to try to knock that persistent veteran suicide rate down. How does AI come into the picture? What kinds of data are required? And what are you doing there?
Yeah, we're looking at, from a variety of angles, how we can use AI and ML to help with suicide prevention. As we know, this is a top priority for VA. The one program, a program that we have in production is called ReachVet, in which we have an algorithm that stratifies veterans by risk for those who may be at high risk of suicide versus lower risk. And those that are identified as potentially being at higher risk, we have programs around that that can help reach out to and provide supportive services to veterans is one area. And then we're also looking at a variety of areas for the future.
And what kind of data do you have to feed in to kind of understand those factors? And that must be an area where privacy protection and depersonalization must be super crucial.
Yeah, so I don't work directly on that specific project, but broadly it involves using factors that we know are clinical risk factors for suicide that are already in their electronic health record, and then putting those together to identify a risk score.
And in general, though, can AI in a context like this also reveal factors that you did not know, rather than simply gathering large volumes of factors that you thought you did know and speeding up that process?
Yes, definitely. And I think that's one of the kind of transitions we see with generative AI. So we're not currently using that in the suicide prevention space because we want to make sure it's very safe, secure, trustworthy beforehand. But a lot of these newer technologies involve using far more parameters and far more information. And so it can kind of crunch all of that data to identify the most important factors kind of a priori versus you initially kind of deciding and thinking what those important factors might be.
And maybe briefly discuss the process by which you go from, hey, this is a good idea, let's run some algorithms, feed some data, test it, and bridging the gap from once you trust that that process and that AI application are trustworthy, getting it into production so that it becomes part of the workflow for the people.
Yeah, I think that's when it comes to, one, having the right people at the table from the very beginning, so including the workflow experts and the engineers, et cetera, so we can ensure that whatever algorithm is developed or is purchased can actually fit into those workflows, and we have kind of that broad plan for what that approach might be. And that's an area I'm particularly passionate about. I think coming from academia, we develop a lot of really exciting AI and ML, and a lot of it's kind of developed for in a vacuum for academic reasons. And so really making sure that we have that plan from the beginning, then testing and measuring, of course, on representative data specifically. So particularly if it's a third party product, et cetera, ensuring that we've tested and see good results on the VA population of interest is 100% crucial to the success of any of our algorithms. From that, it would depend a lot on, you know, what specific workflow or process you'd integrate it into, but it definitely would involve a lot of, you know, the engineering components of integration, but also a lot of people and process change management, I think, is a key thing that sometimes might be underappreciated when it comes to integrating these AI and ML models. So a lot of what happens is the engineering around it, the people that are using it, and the end users it's affecting, and having all of those people and all of those processes worked out from the beginning. And then, of course, continuing to monitor that performance for bias and other challenges. I think we all live in an evolving world and recognize that models have the potential to change accuracy over time. And so how can we really have that continuous monitoring to ensure that that high accuracy and that usefulness that we saw in the beginning when we were testing continues to stay there? And if not, how do we update or what do we do to ensure that that happens?
Dr. Kimberly McManus, Deputy Chief Information Officer for Artificial Intelligence at the Veterans Affairs Department. We'll return with more of the interview after the short break. I'm Tom Temin.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at maximus.com/federal.
Welcome back to our interview with Dr. Kimberly McManus, Deputy Chief Technology Officer for AI, Artificial Intelligence, at the Veterans Affairs Department. Our topic is artificial intelligence and its use in improving mission delivery and modernization. And earlier you mentioned that there are six basic principles that the VA follows for trustworthiness of AI. Maybe run through those for us briefly.
Yeah. So the first principle is purposeful. So this is, you know, what is the goal of this AI use case, and is AI the right way to solve the problem? AI has a ton of potential, but it also has additional maintenance costs and risks. So we really want to ensure that it's the right solution for the problem at hand. And then two is effective and safe. So does the problem work? Does the result work? And is it safe? Is it unbiased, et cetera there? Three, we have secure and private. So this comes down to our cybersecurity. I think you mentioned earlier, data privacy. Have we worked out, you know, any of those types of challenges? And in that case, we have pretty robust systems at VA for other types of software and data already. And so we can leverage a lot of that for these. Then we also have fair and equitable. So that is looking more closely, specifically at bias, et cetera, and that we definitely do not want to be introducing additional bias or have the potential to have additional inequity, because any AI we introduce, we want to have, you know, that positive, useful impact. Transparent and explainable. So a lot of particularly this generative AI technology is a little bit of a black box. And so this is around, how do we ensure, one, that people understand where we use AI, and that, two, the outputs are well understood, kind of where they're coming from or what they would be used for. And then lastly, we have accountable and monitored. So this is what I was saying before, that ensuring that we continue to monitor these systems and they continue to be accountable for providing those positive outcomes.
And you mentioned the very first one under purposeful. Is it the right way to solve? Is AI the right way to solve? That's something you probably have to determine early on, I would think, because everyone is imbued with news and constant barrage of information about AI. People think, well, I can solve anything. Just give me some AI. But maybe not the case.
Yeah, I think we're seeing almost every product that we use is getting an AI feature. But yeah, so I think that comes back to really focusing on what the problem you're trying to solve is. And sometimes the problem might be to, you know, create better content by expert content creators. It might be to have a better website. It might be to, instead of using a PDF form, put the form online. Those might be kind of more non-AI solutions that solve a specific problem specifically related to government services. And so I think really having the right people at the table, including those AI experts and the end users, and saying, is this the most efficient and safest way to solve the problem? Because AI has really a lot of opportunity, but it does introduce additional risk, additional maintenance cost, and kind of additional unknowns. And so we want to make sure we're doing it in the cases it can have the most positive impact.
And most of the cases we've been talking about have been on the VHA side, the health side. What about the Veterans Benefits Administration, which has casework and adjudication as part of what it does? Are they also seeking AI solutions for maybe getting rid of backlogs or adjudicating cases faster, or that is, empowering their caseworkers to be able to work faster?
Yes, VBA is also looking at how they can augment how their current systems work to decrease some of that admin burden and, you know, decrease their backlogs and improve casework speed. And so in that vein, they're looking at a lot of the optical character recognition to translate any type of handwritten notes onto the computers, as well as how we can extract information from those documents better. So using natural language processing to identify where in the documents relevant pieces of information are. And then you can continue to take that further to identify, not only does this say something relevant to the claim, but maybe it says whether or not that's present in the claim. And so using kind of along their step of the journey from having these documents to making a decision, I think there's a lot of points in which AI can kind of help guide and summarize and augment in a way that can be really helpful for benefits processing there.
Yeah, so augmentation rather than making decisions seems to be the theme of the way you're applying AI, say in radiology. It's not going to tell you that's the cancer, operate on that. Or in the case of a VBA type of claim, it'll say, yes, that person is disabled. No, that one is not. That you would not have AI answer for you.
Right. So we definitely are thinking about it in the context of augmentation. What, while having really our humans and employees still in charge of making those decisions, and having the AI kind of come in and do those more kind of tedious tasks that humans, one, can contribute to burnout for them, and two, but just kind of summarizing that information where at the end of the day, we still have humans that are accountable and responsible for making any decisions. And we see this as kind of an augmentive assistive technology.
And as the AI point person and also a data scientist, you're not really strictly in the traditional sense an information technology person, and you're not a clinician. Traditionally, it's the program owners or the clinicians and the IT people have had to interact to get the systems needed done. AI brings kind of a third element of data and understanding of AI itself. So let's talk about your relation with the IT side, because this changes their lives too, doesn't it?
Yeah. So in the IT side being the kind of engineering and IT side?
Right. The operational side of systems and having enough graphic processing unit capacity for the algorithms and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So this is an area that I have focused on a lot as I kind of transition to data science as well as machine learning engineering. What I'm personally most passionate about is how we can integrate AI and ML into those IT systems. And they definitely require kind of different skill sets. But the most important thing is just that people are at the table and they're interacting. I think, you know, clinicians, data scientists, and IT folks, we all can say the same word and mean something different. And so developing that shared vocabulary is very important as well.
Is most of the work of cranking the algorithms and getting the data done in some of the VA commercial cloud providers as opposed to its own data systems or its own data centers?
Yeah, so we have an enterprise data platform that's called Summit that contains much of our EHR, electronic health record data, as well as other types of data. And so we have much of our data in our healthcare, in our cloud platforms that we keep on our network. We also work with other organizations such as Oak Ridge National Labs, who does some of our more kind of deep R&D related to data science and AI as well.
Yeah, sounds like you've made real progress here. Fair to say, is that the feeling in VA that we've had some breakthroughs here and we're on the verge of some of them? It sounds like you're really on a lot of the top areas.
Yeah, I'm really excited and optimistic about this space. We definitely are keeping a very strong focus on trustworthy AI and safety. And there are just so many areas that AI and ML and new technology has the potential to really positively impact our mission to care for veterans. So I am optimistic, and I think we've made a lot of progress. We have a long way to go, but I'm excited.
Dr. Kimberly McManus, Deputy Chief Technology Officer for Artificial Intelligence at the Veterans Affairs Department. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Maximus on Federal News Network.
In today's federal government, security by design is key to achieving the highest levels of security compliance. From security consulting and architecture design to comprehensive managed services, Maximus delivers end-to-end protection of critical data, systems, and operations. We are a trusted cybersecurity partner, delivering cutting-edge solutions that enable government to securely operate in a digitally connected world, securing every aspect of your mission. Learn more at Maximus.com/federal.